This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, Georgie, check for Dadsy. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery free and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Leicester City have a penalty kick in the 6th minute of injury time.
Knockout takes. Almunia saves. Knockout follows in. Almunia saves again.
And now Watford are on the counter-attack.
Forestieri.
Oh, I don't believe this.
Here's Hulk. Deeney.
I do not believe what I've just seen. Troy Deeney has scored from a Leicester penalty that was saved by Almunia.
Do not scratch your eyes. Do not scratch your eyes. Do not scratch your eyes.
You're listening to the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast. I'm Justin.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Peter.
And I am so pleased to be able to introduce to the podcast, Heidi Boothroyd. I am so excited to be speaking to you. How are you? All good?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Thanks very much for having me on.
Oh, hey, listen, I've been trying to get you on forever. I've done everything to try and get you on, so at least you are here now, which is really good news. If I may just speak as a fan quickly before we get into everything, that 2005-2006 season is one of my favourite seasons in the 40 years that I've been going to Vicarage Road. I think we were favourites to go down that year, and you came in and everyone was like, who's Heidi Boothroyd and all the rest of it, and what a season that was. I took my daughter for the first time that season. Some of the things that were put on by the club, where I remember one time there was a sort of a thing at the Hornet shop where the first 20 kids and whatever got a free kit. And then when you went into the shop, you were in there. Behind the tills was Gavin Mahn and Ashley Young and Marlon King and just all these things that were going on. And I just thought, oh, this is great. This is a really nice way to be a fan. So firstly, from me, thank you for that, because honestly, it was just absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. That's my gushing bit over now. I wanted to get that out early doors. I'm sure Peter will be a little bit more less gushy than me.
Well, there you go. AD, the good news is you've got a fangirl. The bad news is he looks like Justin. What can you do?
That is the problem. That is the problem, for sure.
No, absolutely. There is a season there. But what we like to try to do, ideally, is get a little bit of understanding, if possible, of the man in the shirt as a player, in a tracksuit as you come through to coaching, and then obviously into what will always be seen as, exactly as Justin said, one of the most iconic seasons in Watford history, and how everything has gone on to there and how your career has carried on. And another playoff final with Northampton. I remember sitting there watching that. Obviously, the England stuff and everything that's gone on since. We'd just like to cover it all, but obviously focusing a bit on Watford. We always start these by asking, if we can just go back to the start of AD as a kid, how did you fall in love with football? In the first instance, what was how did you get into it as a get-go?
My first, two memories. The first memory is, for me, when I fell in love with football, was the Argentina 1978 World Cup. So you remember all of
that's getting applause. Yeah. That is getting applause. That's the right vintage. Well done. Correct answer. Lovely. Carry on. Sorry, I interrupt.
And I just remember that was really the start for me, 1978, and Mario Kempes and the Dutch. But then the real World Cup that I really got into, I'd have to be, and I can remember running home from school to get to see the game, was when Italy played Brazil. And that was Falcao, that was Socrates, Adair, and then the Italians, Paolo Rossi, all the stuff with the drugs, having a ban, coming back, yeah, scoring, yes. Hat tricks. So that was when it got me, football, when it really grabbed me, and I thought, I've got to do something in my life that's related to football, whatever it is.
We have referenced on this podcast that 1982 Brazil side, possibly one of the greatest international sides not to win the World Cup. If you can, go and have a look at that on YouTube, because that Italy 3, Brazil 2, it was on of a kind of 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because it was the World Cup. There was always three games on and all of that, and it was stupendous. So you watched that. How did you get into playing as well then, in terms of as a school kid?
Well, I'd always played for my school teams, for county teams. So I played for Bradford Boys, as they were then. I wasn't quite good enough to get to Yorkshire Boys, and really managed to get myself a career in the lower leagues, and never really had to work for a living. I've been very lucky. But I had an injury. I broke my leg playing against Notts County for Peterborough, fast forwarding very quickly. And that really, before that, I worked, so when I was at Mansfield and when I was at Hearts, and I was playing during the morning, and then in the evenings I'd come back and coach and work with the kids in the Centre of Excellence, as it was then. So I'd pretty much, by the time I'd got the Watford job, I'd worked as a first team assistant manager, as a first team coach, as a youth team coach, and then I'd worked with the under 16s and then all the way to under 8s. So I'd be able to go and have a conversation with one of the guys in the academy, and I understood what they were talking about, because I managed to do it. So yeah, that's from playing, the transition from playing into coaching and managing was really fast for me, but something that I've really enjoyed. I'm really glad I did it, because so many young coaches these days, they finish playing, particularly if they're high profile players, they finish playing, and before you know it, everybody's writing about them and telling them what they're good at, what they're not good at. I was lucky enough that I could make hundreds of mistakes on a cold and blowy youth team pitches.
Yep.
I remember having 5 years at Norwich and Peterborough and West Brom, and really grew into the role. Yeah, I'd have to say those mistakes that I made were the making of me and shaped who I am really today.
And I mentioned there are some successful young managers who come to Watford, and there are some actually startling similarities. Let's just take a look at the three. Yourself, obviously Graham Taylor as well, who came to the club in 32, he'd been at Lincoln for a little bit longer, but again, he'd had a couple of seasons before getting them promoted. Yourself coming in, and also Tom Cleverley, all having to retire early through injury, but already seemingly, was it before the injury, therefore, that you'd already taken on this idea about this is what I can do from the coaching point? And at what point did you go, actually, yeah, I think I've got something in this coaching side as well? When did the penny start to drop for you in terms of confidence, thinking, yeah, I've really got something here?
Well, I think it was panic stations for me, because when I did break my leg, I was like doom and gloom. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I tried to get myself on a physio's degree. Now, I only got one O-level, and I think that was in woodwork. So I hadn't done too much at school, to be honest. I couldn't wait to get out of there and go and do what I needed to do. But yeah, it was, where did I get to then? Sorry.
You went into physio, you've got your woodwork degree, so you're good at making splints. That's a start. But then you got into the coaching side.
Don't forget it, Pete. So yeah, I was doing this degree, and I got to know all these muscles names and all these bones names and all the anatomical stuff.
Yeah.
And I suddenly sat down, it was like a eureka moment. I was thinking, I just thought to myself, what am I doing? Wasting my time with something that really I don't love. I'm only doing it to stay in the game. So that's when I really decided that I was going to be a coach, and I'm going to do all I can do to be a coach. It might be very competitive, but it's up to me to be the best that I can be at doing that. So I think that was the key moment where I thought, rather than surviving, why not do something that's going to make a difference? And that was the key moment for me, I think. And that was still when I was at Peterborough. So I was a year into an injury and thinking, what am I going to do next?
Absolutely. And you go in, and if I remember rightly, you took a couple of the development sides at Peterborough, and then you move across to Norwich, where you're there for a little while, as you say, there developing. What was the kind of the feeling in terms of the step up? Because We know Peterborough, you know, it's a fine club, good tradition, it's got a good support base. But when you're going to Norwich, presumably that's the same thing as stepping up a division, but you're doing it on the coaching side and on the development side. You're still, excuse me to say it, but you're still learning your trade, you're still pushing forward. How did that feel? Was there a kind of a step up in quality? Did you have to, as you move from club to club, not reinvent yourself, but take a step up in terms of the quality of the coaching that you were providing, or did that just come in time?
Well, we had to be qualified. We had to be, and I made it my business to get qualified. So I might not have had many O levels and many A levels, but what I did do was make sure that I got my full badge, my UEFA A badge, very early on. Again, like Graham, I think he was 23. I was 23 as well. And as very often happens, things in life are, they happen for a reason, and paths cross and things happen. And timing can be a key issue in this, because I remember it was the first year of the academy systems.
Yep.
So 32 clubs, Peterborough is this tiny little club in East Anglia, decided that they were going to try and mix it with Man United and City and Liverpool and Arsenal. So we'd be in a group with Arsenal, Tottenham, their best kids against our best kids. And obviously we didn't win too many. The under-19s had a decent season. They finished mid-table. But my team, the under-17s, it took me until January for the team to whip to, in, as Barry Fry used to come in every day and say, have you won a game yet, Boovy? That's what I used to shout as he came in on a Monday morning. So,
we like Barry Fry stories here.
And then when we did get a win, he came and put a big bottle of, it would have been champagne, it had been pomade, knowing him. And he put it on my desk and said, there you are, well done. Well done. So timing is everything. I was retiring. I had this great opportunity given to me by Barry Fry and Peterborough, the club. And away I went very quickly because of the nature of the club. I became the bus driver. We tried to be professional and get the boys a nutritious diet. So I got involved in that. Yeah. Pretty much everything that you could get involved in, I was doing it then, trying to make myself better and trying to give the lads a better chance of coming through the system.
And of course, the advent of sports science was coming through at that point, wasn't it, as well? So there was a lot to get hold of.
Well, there was, yeah. So that was all coming through. That was the new normal, if you want. Everybody thought they had to get an edge as a footballer. You needed to be fitter and faster and stronger and everything else. Eat the right things. Make sure you're a good professional. So we tried to instill all these things into the players. And some came out the other side. Matthew Everington at that point and Simon Davis went on, that they're now coaches now and coaching coaches. So the cycle keeps on going. But those two were good products for the academy system. And we had a lot of other players. Incidentally, people like Matthew Gill, who's the assistant manager at Southampton. Dan Ashworth, who's the most sought after.
CEO kind of thing, isn't he? That's his role these days, isn't it?
And John Morley, who was the academy manager for Brighton. So it was a good little group of a think tank, if you like, which later on we grew at Watford, a very similar situation. So those were great times, but those were the times in the trenches where I felt that I was getting better all the time and making less mistakes, but then making different ones.
Fantastic. Let's just let Carl in just so he can gloat because he's got a palm tree behind him. Milton Keynes has never looked so good.
How are we? Are we well?
Very good. Yeah. Nice to see you.
Are you slumming it?
I'm very sorry. I've got a
very jealous.
It? No, I don't slum it. No, not at all. I just want to say very quickly, I had to jump on, AD, because there was a couple of things I had to say to you. Firstly was thank you so much for being our manager for a period at the club where there was no kind of next step and you came in. And I think it's fair to say that when you came in, everyone was a little bit not sure about what was going to happen next. And you took us on a ride of a lifetime. It was a roller coaster, and you'll always have a place in my heart. And I know for a fact, a place in the majority of Watford supporters' hearts for what you achieved at the club. It was brilliant. And we saw so much steps forward in terms of players. Ashley Young still got a career now. Marlon King scored goals for fun. It was unreal. And I'm really jealous of these two that I can't be part of this podcast because obviously I'm slumming it here under palm trees, but I had to say that to you and I want that to be part of the podcast because I'm a massive fan of yours and an advocate for Brady Boothroyd and the history that you left at the club. So thank you. And that's all I wanted to say, really.
That's really kind, Carl. I'm welling up here. That's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
no worries.
And certainly I said it on the pitch on Saturday. It's a massive part of my life and it was just a great time. It was such a great group of people coming together and being a real force. It was great. And nobody expected us to do it. That was the best thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I Yeah, I just wanted to say it. And I've said it to a couple of people that we've had on the podcast. You're a fucking legend. Simple as that.
Thank you.
Yeah. We do swear occasionally, here, but only in a good way.
Yeah, we do swear a bit. Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm not there. Good company. That's fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, you're okay. Being a Yorkshireman, you're used to the odd swear word now and again, so you'll be fine with it. I hope to see you at the Vic watching the game. I'll ask you a question, actually. What's going on with Eddie Boothroyd at the moment? What are you up to at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I think if I'm here for any longer in the house, I think I'll be buried under the patio. I think Emma's sick to death.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Honestly, it gets to a point when you're out of work, you know that you're going to come back, but you don't know when. So you can't make any real plans to go and do anything. So when you do, it's like, well, somebody's going to call. You carry your phone with you even more. You sleep next to the phone. Watch what you're going to be doing next. So as we are right now, the garden looks good. The house is painted. Been out to a lot of games just to keep my eye in really around the championship because that's where I feel I could come back. That's where I see myself.
Not against us, please. Not against us. We've just got a new manager. Leave us alone for a little bit.
No, I would hate that. I'd hate that. But I'm really pleased that Tom has got the opportunity.
Yeah,
and I hope it's awesome. Given the time to do what he'll be able, I'm sure he can do.
I called it very early. I think I saw a change in the team. You're a football man. You've seen probably over the last few seasons. That's not the Watford you recognise in terms of players and what we're doing. And I've seen a change under Tom. So I'm glad they've given him the opportunity, and hopefully he can go on and put us back to where we should be.
Yeah, no, me too. I hope he does. I hope he does well.
AD, I'm going to love you and leave you.
Just before you go, I'm not sure where I'm going to be next. I could be somewhere as a number two. I could be abroad again. That was an interesting experience.
Tom needs a number two. That's what I'm saying. You know, someone that knows the club.
We'll get on to that. We'll get on to these questions.
We'll leave that there. But guys, thank you for allowing on. AD, love you. So much respect for you, mate. Really appreciate everything you did for the club and taking us on that journey. I won't go over that again. But yeah, it's an absolute honour just to do this very quickly. Yeah, love you, mate. And I hope you get back to doing what you love very soon.
Thanks, mate. Have a good holiday.
All the best, guys. Yeah, appreciate it. All the best, guys.
Cole, it's good to see that the Grecian 2000 for beards is still working. Good work.
You keep Peter, that there. You arsehole. Why have you thrown that up?
I'm just saying. Hey,
that's not nice, is it? Shouldn't say that to a grown man. He gets mental this health like, and all that. He can't say
that. Isn't it? Where you get the people to cry that they have on the Piers Morgan interview.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, this is it. Yeah.
We go for good cop, exactly. Bad cop, delusional cop. That's the idea. That's fine. Yeah. That's all good.
All right. Well, enjoy the weather, lads. I'm sure it's about 4 degrees. I've got to go back and get sunburned. See you later. Love you. Bye.
Good luck.
Off he goes. Honestly, what can you do? You wouldn't know it, but literally 5 weeks ago, that man was in a coma. I mean, what can you do? Anyway,
where were we, Peter, before he popped in? Can you remember? Yeah,
well,
can you remember what we got to?
We had got to Norwich. We were on the development pathway, and basically, we've gone from what is our normal way, which is like, how do you fall in love with football? And it's almost like, what's the road to the Vic? We've got to Norwich. We all know you're going to have a season over in Leeds, but I just want to understand in terms of, you were mentioning there you hadn't had a win and finally you get the cheap beer or the cheap wine from Barry Fry. We've spoken to Derek Payne. We've already done Barry Fry. He's appeared on this podcast without his knowledge more than once. It's very good. We like Barry Fry stories
as well.
That's obviously the results at the weekend. Whilst obviously you as a coach and a manager are trying to get that for the players and it'd be good for them to get into a winning mentality. From a development point, before we step into suddenly you are in, as you say, with the first team, you're looking at how you're going to develop these players, how you're going to get the likes of Etherington and Davis in to have a career. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to win every match, but did it take a different kind of style of coaching to concentrate on that? Or you know, how did you get from that into the first team environment is the question, I think, really.
Well, the answer is I didn't change very much. Just looking at it now, and if I look at it can be timing. So I'll look at that team, and I know we're going to to and fro, but that team that we had that was successful, that got promoted. You've got a goalkeeper really who's Ben Foster, who was fantastic, but let's be fair, at that time he had a ricket in him. I can remember him throwing the ball viciously into a Coventry player's back when we got beat 4-1, rebounding to their player and they scored. So he was going to make mistakes. Lloyd Doyley, who's I was blessed to see him score his only goal at the Vicarage Road, which I was doing the commentary, and it was the best thing I've seen in football. Forget Air Day and Socrates. Lloyd Doyley getting that goal made my career. That was fantastic.
This is where Lloydinho comes from. That's it. It's the connection to Eddie. Yeah. I like it.
And what a great guy. But, you know, he'd not been overlooked, but it was just his time is coming into the first team.
Yeah.
Never seen anybody beat him 1v1 as a player against Ronaldo, some of the best players in the world. He couldn't get beat 1v1. So much so that we left him on his own, 1v1 on many occasions, 1v2 when we were chasing. And then I look at Jay Demerit. Again, it was the timing was right for him to come into the team.
Yeah.
I said to him, you know, I've got this rocky story and you will be captain of America at some point in time. But he was naive, he was young, he was daft. He'd say to me, I took him for a walk one day around the training field and said to him, everybody in the team, I'm trying to encourage to talk more on the pitch. Jay, I want you to be a leader. Listen to the guy next to you, Malky, he never shuts up, he's brilliant. Yeah. You've got to do that. Why don't you speak more? And he said, the boss, he said, I just don't know what I'm doing myself, so I don't want to speak to anybody else and get them wrong, you know, give them wrong advice. So I said, okay, mate, I appreciate your honesty, that'll do. And then I've mentioned Malky already, he was in the Clark Carlisle salute, towers of strength. Malky might have not been the quickest on the turn, but because he organised himself and the people around him, he could do it. He looked a player. He was decent on the ball. He knew what we were doing. Him and Gavin were my captains on the pitch, really. Yeah. And Marlon, the three of them, down the spine of the team. Jordan, I'll always have a soft spot for Jordan Stewart because Jordan was my first signing. And again, great 1v1. Never got the opportunity at Leicester. Came to us and thrived. Played in the Premier League. Did some amazing things. Matthew Spring, whose career wasn't quite sure where it was going, but I worked with him at Leeds.
Yeah.
So I knew of him. I knew him as a person.
Bold decision to get him in, by the way, because in 2002, yeah, he scored a goal for Luton against us that was absolutely amazing. Was and his name was Mud until he came in. You,
yeah, we had a little song for him, though, didn't you? That we did.
Yeah.
But he got 12 goals that season, which is a terrific return from a guy that never hardly played at Leeds and lost his way a little bit. So alongside him was Gavin, who's, again, he was the organiser. He'd go around and whisper and organise people on the pitch. He was terrific. Very underrated, yeah, in our great system of player he was. Ashley Young, like we said at the start of the podcast, he's still, not only has he played for England, he's played for England in different positions.
Yeah.
You know, he's been a left wing back. I can't think of anybody would have been, and I was there with him at England when he played in the World Cup. So that was a nice moment. We all got a Russian doll and mine was Ashley Young's. But he is a terrific player and still going now, but young and daft, but so talented. And then on the right-hand side, I still bump into Paul Devlin every now and again, and he said, I really appreciate you being honest and telling me that I was going to be released at the end of the season. So that allowed him to go and get a club, which I know he always appreciated. And every time I see him, he always talks about that. Chris from Eagles, Manchester United. Chris Eagle scored from the halfway line at the old stadium, if you can remember that one.
With Dean, yeah, that's it.
Oh my God, what a place that was. You could be 2-0 up and kick the ball away and you'll come back for 20 minutes and you get beat. You beat him 2-0. That was the game plan for them. But he was terrific. But James Chambers came in right at the end, I think. He scored in the final.
Yep.
He was claiming the goal that spun off Sullivan's head.
Bit of an odd goal.
I always talk to the players about margins. I always show them that. That is incredible how the ball just fell over the line. It was like in slow motion. And then the front two, of course, Hendo, I said, what are you going to do when you finish playing, Hendo? He said, I think I'm going to be a cage fighter. And I thought he was kidding. He wasn't. He said, I fancy going to the octagon. I said, okay, mate, fine.
He's going up Everest or something, isn't he? I believe.
Yeah, Everest is a friend. He was a real powerhouse, as you could, but he used what he had to maximise his ability, and he was a foil. He was great for Marlon King because Marlon just played off him.
Yep.
And as for Marlon, well, I think where he's concerned, it was last chance saloon for him. And when he came to us, he knew that he had to make a name for himself. And I got on very well with him from the start. I was with him at Leeds, like Springy and Clark Carlisle. I knew their histories, knew them inside out. And a lot of people will talk about what he can't do. But what he did do from a purely on-the-pitch perspective and what he did off the pitch, how good he was with the young kids, particularly Youngie. He took him under his wing very early on. And you wrap it all up and you think, well, and we did when we started at the beginning of the season, with what we've got, where can we go? What can we do? And we all agreed as a staff and as a group of players, playoffs is a minimum. Anything less than that. And you could feel the room was tingling because we thought, oh, okay. And they all thought this bloke's a bit daft. But again, once we had, the key game for me that meant we were going to go up, I think, to the players was when we went to Plymouth. We had two games on the road, Plymouth away and Cardiff away.
Yep.
And in the Plymouth game, we were 2-0 down. I think we drew 3-3.
Yep.
I won't say 3-3, but I gave him the biggest. I read the riot act to him in the Plymouth dressing room and she said to him, if we're going to do anything, we have to come here and beat teams like this. This is what we're about. This is not about being mid-table. If you're going to win, if we're going to win, then we have got to get ourselves into positions where in the league where we can challenge. So thankfully, we managed to win the game. It was great for me because I was able to then, whenever we had a good result, we'd almost hit them with a club and say, right, this is reinforced. This is what we're trying to do. This is why we're trying to do it. And we do that after every game. And to get to the start of the question, youth team coaching to senior team coaching, I don't think people just work with being shouted at all the time. Now and again, you can throw a few teacups around. And Barry Fry did that. I'm sure Graham did that. And I certainly did that. But you can, the human beings at the end of the day, and you want to get the best out of them, you've got to make sure that you listen to them, you know what their needs, and you help them achieve their needs and their goals. And that is pretty much what we did as a staff with that group of players.
We've spoken to Jay, Marlon, I'm trying to think if we've spoken to any others from the 2005-06 season. We've definitely spoken to Jay and Marlon.
Well, we had Adi Mariappa and Lloyd Doyley on only a few weeks ago.
This is true. This is very true. And I always try and find out what was going on, what was different. There was talk about the bus in the training ground where you were saying, who's with me on the bus? We divided up the room with chairs and things like that. I also remember around the club, there are lots of quotes by, was it Vince Lombardi all over the place, motivational quotes and stuff. So was it more about motivation and stuff, or was it more about sort of tactics? What was the main thing that kind of got everybody together and got them focused to doing this?
Well, I think the first thing is that we had balance. So where one player, for example, Malky and Jay. So Malky couldn't run, but he knew the game. Jay could run, but didn't know the game.
Yeah.
So putting them together and the rest of the group synergized them, and the talent that was there, the raw talent that was there, those players coming together, that would be one thing. So they were galvanized. The second thing is, as you've already talked about, nobody expected us to win. And I think we'll talk about the modern day game as it is like 20 years ago now, but the way that they responded to the league as it was then, that old championship for me was very, in 2005, was very stoic, very limited, very defensive. And things just get rejiggled and reworded and thrown back at you a lot of the time. But what I believe, and still do believe, is that people want to see goal mouth action, that people want to see goals, that people fans want to get off their seat and somebody goes, oh, how did he do that? And then the kids go home and practice it up against the wall or whatever it is. And I was very much about, we can beat these. And I wouldn't talk about the opposition to be afraid of them. I would just talk about how we're going to win, how we're going to beat this group that's been put in front of us. Teams like that have shot huge budgets compared to us, Leeds, Southampton, Ipswich, those were clubs that shouldn't really have been in that league, but they were, and we beat them. And sometimes you can get a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you tell yourself all the time, or you tell the group all the time that you want to play safe or you want to be defensive, no way. I thought really early on, I'm either going to have a real go at this and we're going to be successful, but I'm not going to play safe. I'm going to go for it. The closer we got to getting promoted, the more I personally hid it from the lads and the staff. But the closer we got to that, I was thinking, bloody hell, we're going to do this. No, I could feel it. But whilst I truly believe that that group of players and the staff and the board, we were all together, all rowing in the same direction, and that's true. I did put out the seats as if they were in a bus. Yeah. And I talked about getting the right people on the bus and then making sure they're sat in the right seats. So we talk about that a lot. And I think all those things culminated in the players, the character of the players, the balance of the players, the togetherness of the people in the office. Because we go in the office quite a bit. I made sure the players went in and said hello. Because there's nothing, and I know it's difficult as clubs get bigger, especially as Watford is now. It's got a lot bigger than it ever was. But that human touch that I think Graham had, where he'd come into the offices after training, I'd do the same thing. You stay in the area so you get a feel for what the area is and what they expect. And if you bump into a Watford fan in the street, they want to tell you, well, it's their right too. They should do. And it's amazing what you can build over a period of time.
It's not just the bumping into the people in the street. I used to sit in the old East End, which is now the Sir Elton John. And I vividly remember before matches, you would hang around the stand and anyone could just come up to you and talk to you. And you would quite happily tell them why players were left out or, you know, what your thoughts were on the game. I've never, ever seen that from a manager before. Was it important to have those sort of interactions with fans?
Yeah, I made that decision really on, particularly when we were away from home. So I did it at home, but I did it away from home as well because I just thought it was different and it gave people the opportunity to say, you never guess what happened to me today. Because managers never did that. Yeah. They'd stay. And when it gets a bit sticky as a manager and you're getting a bit, that's when you've got to get in there more, I think. And when part of the, I think, not get the supporters on side, but part of what we were trying to do was to get the Elton John and Graham Taylor vibe, if you like, where we were all in it together. I went and did about five or six fans forums all over Hertfordshire. And I really enjoyed doing them because people really did say what they had an opinion. I was praying that we'd win before we went on the fans forum so I wouldn't get too much stick about anything. But we put them in the diary, we did it, and everybody had their say. And I think there was a connection there without being soppy. I mean, I loved the camaraderie. I love what people had to say, particularly the history of the club and what it is and the fact that Ashley Young, Lloyd Doyley had come through the youth system with a few loanees and a few guys that we just brought in to stabilise it. But those, you're right, it wasn't just about the football. It was everything. It was everything that encompassed that club at that particular time. And to get it over the line was a massive achievement for the whole town. It's brilliant.
Wonderful stuff. I think one of the characteristics of that team, and I think when you just very kindly went through the core of that of the squad that season there and we're talking about them, was that each of those players had something to prove. You mentioned that Marlon needed to do it. I don't think anybody needs to give Darius Henderson anything to prove. See Everest Mountains for details. But a lot of the others were in there. Malky, who had been promoted twice but never been trusted in the Premier League, came and made it a third. It was an astonishing collection of individuals who seemed to want to work together. And there almost seemed to be it's a cheap analogy, but almost like a dogs of war kind of attitude about when they were on the pitch, but a togetherness with everything off of that. How did you go about and how involved were you in those days with the recruitment and those particular people that you selected? Obviously Marlon and Springy you knew from Leeds, but how did you choose to assemble this particular squad of characteristics and balance as you described?
Well, like you say, so going through them again, Marlon I'd worked with, so I knew him. I'd seen him up close at Leeds. Springy I'd seen him up close. Clark Carlisle I'd seen him up close. Malky I worked with at Norwich.
Of course.
So I took the youth team. And it's an interesting story about Malky because the first time he played a Premier League game, he come running off the pitch and hugged me. And I said, what's that for? He said, thank you for not making me a Trivial Pursuit question. He was the only player to get promoted three times and not play in the Premier League.
There you
so
go.
He was buzzing over that. That was him done. He was fine. But yeah, I don't think, the lads had a point to prove. They had undoubted talent. They all had a point to prove, whether it was just being bought by Man United and Sir Alex was kind enough to lend him to us. But he made a ricket and I accepted that. I understood that. But we'd talk it out. We'd get him and Chambo and Richard Lee in the room and we'd have a chat about him and what he needed to do, where he was. And there was a period where he was homesick and Chambo went and looked after him and then came back and told me, yeah, he's fine. So they all went through little stages, if you like, And the more that we won, obviously, the more momentum we got, we actually, you know, we're going to do this. And we, I think one of the best stats I can think of for that particular group was we never lost two on the trot.
Right.
You know, up until April. And I think it was Millwall built us a beat. And we thinking, it's amazing once you get talking how you remember all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because we practiced the playoffs when we played Ipswich and Wolves.
And the penalty.
That was genius. Absolute genius. I'm thinking, why are we staying behind? Because you all stay behind at the end. Right, something's going to happen here. And you actually told the rookery to put them off, which is just brilliant thinking.
Yeah, well, we did. I knew where all the scouts were sat. So I've got one or two friends from Leeds, as it was, that were watching the game. And then I had the curtain shut. And then, I think it was Paddy then got them taken out. And then we did it. We had 11 versus 11 on the penalty spot. And before, that was like the final thing. But leading up to that, I said, right, we've not made the automatics. That's gone. Now we focus on making sure we get the playoffs right. So I spoke to a few managers that had been in that situation before. The players who had been there before, like Sir Malky, they would speak up. What are we going to do? And I said, why don't we practice the playoffs? So we know we're going to play Saturday. We know we're going to play on a Wednesday. Why don't we just call Easter those and play Wolves and Ipswich? Because we might play differently against Wolves. We might not be chasing. So the first game, if you like. The second, we are going to, regardless of what happens, we're going to have a penalty shootout. So we won against ourselves, if you like. And then we talked about that afterwards, what worked well for us, what didn't. But what I wasn't expecting was the amount of real connection and inclusion of the rookery and the whole of the Watford fans staying behind. And when Ben's gone up to take a penalty and hit one, it didn't matter whether the shootout went. Yeah. It was the fact that the staff, the players and the supporters were all involved in that. And I must say, because I haven't given him a mention, but that the board, Andrew, the Russo brothers, Graham Simpson, Mark Ashton, absolutely 100% behind me in everything I wanted to do. And I made some real rickets. So you might remember a player called Sietes.
Yeah, yeah.
That we took one of my first signings. I got Jordan Stewart in and then him. And he didn't work. He couldn't acclimatise. We didn't do our own work. I certainly didn't do my own work. And he was £250,000, I think, at that time, which was a lot of money. And in the end, he left the club. But I was grateful that they stuck with me because that's a lot of money to give away. So thankfully, we were winning. Thankfully, things were going well. All these guys put their money into it, put their energy into it, and people fall out at the end. And that always happens. But I've got nothing but good things to say about that board and those group of people in there.
What with Martin Devaney? What happened with him?
I thought Youngie was better. And my plan all along was get Martin in. Because I didn't know Youngie was going to be Youngie. I knew he was going to be good. But I didn't know he was going to be... And in the end, it was like, I get every player wants to play. But in the end, I thought, okay, well, this guy's going to play. He's going to be grateful because he's one of my players. He's not a player coming in. The balance has to be that he comes in. It's almost like I give him something and he's got to reciprocate.
Okay.
I remember the first game, the Preston game, and I was sat in the lower Graham Taylor, as it is now, the lower Rouse, as it was then, directly behind Youngie as he put the cross in and Darius put the ball in the back of the net. And I was working in non-league at the time and I literally rang my assistant or my mate and I just went, I've just seen somebody who's going to play for England. Because the quality and the whip that he put on that ball for somebody who looked like he was about 4 stone ringing wet was absolutely ridiculous. And then all game, he kept getting going in front of these kind of big old units from Preston and he just nick in front of them. And of course, if they clipped him at all, he's going and free kick, thank you very much, all day. I think his bravery, especially in those early seasons when he still had a not fully developed body, was just astonishing. He was absolutely remarkable. I think you're well known for the innovation. You just said, look, well, I made some ricks. Everybody does. One of the questions we wanted to ask, and we come back to Carl basically offering you the assistant manager role about 20 minutes ago, talked about this the other day when Tom was appointed and we've been talking about it as he's been the interim. And I think these similarities are really interesting. appointed young without necessarily a huge level of first team managerial experience, lots of coaching, lots of being on the board there with yourself. Same thing with Graham. Graham had Bertie Mee. You had Keith Birkinshaw, who, yeah, you know, if you are of a proper vintage in football and you remember the 1978 World Cup, like myself and AD, you will know exactly how good the Tottenham team was between 78 and kind of 84 and the like. What did he do for you? Because we've been talking about who might make a good mentor for Tom as he's taking similar steps. And I'll be honest with you, yesterday, somebody who was rather upset said he will forgive the appointment of Tom Cleverley, providing you're his mentor. There you go. That's just strong words indeed. A lot of love for you there. What did Keith bring in to the equation? Because obviously he's got lots of experience, but you're coming out with lots of innovative stuff as well. How did he work for you mentoring?
Well, it's a really interesting question because I felt I was well prepared for management, and I went for jobs. Wickham was I went for a job there when I was still at Leeds. I needed to be a manager. I needed to get out and do my own thing. Cool. And I went to Wickham. Steve Hayes, who was the sponsor of the club,
yep,
he was like the vice chairman, if you like. And if we could come back to him in a second. So I had an interview there. I didn't get an interview at Kidderminster. I didn't get an interview at Oxford. And there's two or three others that I've applied for. I didn't get. Didn't even get a thanks very much for coming, but, you know, not for us. So then reversing back a little bit, I was on a course for the League Managers Association, which it was like a football diploma, if you like. And as part of it, we had mentors. So wherever you were locally, I think Keith Birkinshaw was in Tring. I was in Norwich. So he got the short straw. So he came all the way over to see me. And the point was that he would like mentor me and spend time with me, which he did when I was youth team coach at Norwich. And fast forwarding back now to just come out of the interview with Steve Hayes. And when you're going in for a job and you know you've done well, like you also know, well, you've bugged it up. But I thought I'd done really well. So I was springing my step. A couple of days later, Steve Hayes, Eddie, I'm really sorry, but we're not going to give you the job. I said, why not? He said, because you haven't got the experience. So I said, so you're going to go with John Gorman. So I know, new John, very, very good, well-respected mm-hmm. manager. And I said, so what are your reasons for not taking me then? Because I had the arse a bit. I said, what? He said, you just got no experience. And I said to him, how am I going to get experience if people like you that are forward thinking are not going to give me the opportunity? And bearing in mind, this was like the old second division, or third division as it was then.
Yep.
So I went home, I sat down and I thought to myself, how can I solve this problem? And then it suddenly occurred to me that there was a link with Mark Ashton from West Brom. So I knew that I might get a bit of help of getting, or at least getting some sort of introduction or to go meet them. But then I just thought to myself, right, what do I need? It's North London. It's a guy that I know. He's very knowledgeable. He's very successful. He's got what I haven't got. I haven't got experience. So when I went in I got the interview for Watford. When I went in there, I knew I had that in my back pocket because probably they would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
But I could just go, well, I would be bringing Keith Birkinshaw in with me. When I said that, it was like, wow, really? Yeah, how do you know him? Well, I know him from his course and he's been like a mentor and I'll drive it. He'll be working with me alongside Dave Ockaday. And so that was the way that I managed to do it. Got a second interview, got the job, and then thought, shit, what am I going to do now?
And the answer was innovate. There's some things that you were commented about. And everybody, whenever anybody says anything, AD Boothroyd, the word innovative always came up, that you would be doing some things. And a lot of the players came up and said, we did so many things that we'd never done before. On occasions, you innovate because people say, but nobody else does this. It takes quite a brave man to say, we're going to do this because nobody else does this. How did you know, or how did you get a sense or a feel? And did Keith play any part in going, yeah, that sounds like a good one, or maybe don't do that? In terms of being innovative and different and creating what you did, which felt like, yes, we got the right players. Yes, a whole host of decisions have been made, done really well. But that season felt like it was your force of will almost driving it all the way through. How did you know what were the good innovations, and how did you reduce the number of ricks that you might pull?
Well, we talked a lot as a staff in the group about stretching our comfort zones. We didn't want to, most people don't want to be stretched. And when I brought in the firewalk, it was like it was a big...
Yes, I remember this. Yeah.
I said to the staff, I've come in early this morning and I've introduced you to this gentleman here. So everybody's looking around, well, what do they do? They've set that up outside. So it's like 12 feet of burning hot coals. And I said, as a staff, we talk about being brave and pushing ourselves. We're all going to do this today. Nah, can't do that. Well, what about the player's feet? It'll be fine. So Andy Rose, the physio, is like panicking, pulled me to one side. Are you sure about this, boss? Are you sure? I said, yeah, let's do it. Because I'd done it before and I knew you'd be all right. So players came in, they knew something wasn't quite right. We didn't bother with the debrief. We just said, right, got a nice surprise for you today. We're going to walk on burning hot coals, which we did. And Keith Mincher, who again was like a Keith Birkinshaw for me, really, a sounding board and a guy that was helping me. He was all over it. So he said, well, come on, this is it. And it's almost, we'd almost like push through this barrier and prove that we could do it. We also did the board breaking and we had to chop it in half. I think everybody did it. And then Henderson, being Henderson, started picking up two and three and headbutting them and all sorts. I kid you not, he's a strong boy. He loved that. That was probably his best training session for us.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery free and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.